Hello and welcome to Plotress.
This is Meg.
This is Lane.
And today we're talking about 11 Scandals to Start to Win a Duke's Heart by Sarah McLean.
This was published in 2011 and is the third book in the Love by Numbers series.
And when we release this episode, we will have reviewed every single Sarah McLean book for the podcast.
Except for her teen books.
The one, yeah, which I'm not counting.
We've reviewed all of her romance novel.
Exactly. So, there you go.
Yeah, we kind of alluded to this when we reviewed the one that starts with 10. This one is not our fave. So if you are madly in love with the Duke of Leighton.
Number one, why? But number two, probably want to turn this episode off.
I wasn't going to start with the aggressive why, but all right, Meg.
That's just going to be the tone of this episode. That's the thing.
Best to, you know, begin as you intend to go on.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm not going to pull any punches.
All right. So do you want to start with the book jacket?
Let's do it. There is no telling where a scandal might lead. She lives for passion. Bold, impulsive, and a magnet for trouble, Juliana Fiori is no simpering English miss. She refuses to play by society's rules. She speaks her mind, cares nothing for the approval of the ton, and can throw a punch with remarkable accuracy. Her scandalous nature makes her a favorite subject of London's most practiced gossips, and precisely the kind of woman the Duke of Leighton wants far, far away from him.
He swears by reputation. Scandal is the last thing Simon Pearson has room for in his well-ordered world. The Duke of Disdain is too focused on keeping his title untainted and his secrets unknown. But when he discovers Juliana hiding in his carriage late one evening, risking everything he holds dear, he swears to teach the reckless beauty a lesson in propriety.
She has other plans, however. She wants 2 weeks to prove that even an unflappable duke is not above passion. I mean, it's like, this is, I feel like this is what Sarah McLean wanted the book to be about.
This is where we start with the burns, because like this one's, again, we're just going to go right for the jugular, you guys. This book jacket almost has more substance than the book.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like somehow even less happens.
Yep. 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 There's not a lot. Like there's more that happens, but there's also less. There's like more in their backstory, but then like, I don't know.
I think before we do our normal spiel, I just want to say, I think my number one problem with this book is like the plot makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like this book really is just a series of vignettes that Sarah McLean is attempting to string together.
Yeah.
With a coherent narrative, but like it just doesn't work for me.
Right.
And I think that is, other than who they both are as people, my biggest problem with the book.
That was just like, other than that.
But like, honestly, I don't. You were texting me before we started recording about how like nothing happens in this book. But mm-hmm. even more than that, like sequentially, I never knew what I was expecting to happen.
Right.
And not in a good way.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think about a lot. This may fit better in a different part of the episode.
Whatever, but, this is what editing's for.
Yeah, I think about the starchy main character, especially the starchy main male character, the starchy hero. Mm-hmm. And you would think that a starchy hero is a hero that I would really like, right? Like, I really like people who try to stand up for their ideals. And I really like people who are in general good people, like decent people who try to do the right thing. Right.
Right.
But I find that the starchy hero who thinks a lot of himself is a hero that I really don't like.
I think
that's my issue here.
It's also Maximus Batten.
Exactly. Yeah. It's Maximus. Mm-hmm.
It's to me, it's not just that they're starchy, they're not principled.
Yes.
The starch needs to be accompanied by principle rather than just, I am Duke, hear me roar.
Yeah, it's also in The Truth About Cads and Dukes. This specific kind of starchy hero is a kind that I just it's a starchy hero who looks down on the heroine, and that is what I just can't do it, and like almost despises himself
Right.
for wanting to be with her.
Yes, and I like Maximus's book more than you do because Elizabeth Hoyt is good for some batshittery.
Yeah.
And like ultimately I can be like, okay, I hate this character, but is this book fun? Whereas this book misses on both the likable main character and fun front.
Right. I guess I just don't the book where the heroine has to prove herself for to the hero is never going to be a plot that I'm interested in.
And I know most of the time it attempts to subvert it, and the end result is the hero learns that he was wrong and she never should have had to prove anything.
Right.
But, like, let's be honest.
Well, by the end, he does learn that, but he learns that through her proving herself to him, if that makes sense.
Exactly. Like, she
Right.
still has to make a ton of sacrifices to get him to that point.
That's right.
All right. So, before we digress too far, far away, as usual, we generated a random number between 1 and 50 and wrote our own summaries using that number as our word count. This episode, that number is 12. Meg, you go first.
This is my 12-word summary. I honestly don't know what these two characters see in each other.
Okay, my only possible answer is they're both really hot.
That is the only possible answer, but it's not sufficient for a romance novel.
Okay. So
Just
my
saying.
12-word summary. Truly insufferable Duke is dignitized by an idiot. No one learns anything.
It's true. I cannot argue any of those words.
I wish I was walking away from this book being like Juliana deserved better, but this was fun. But she really didn't, and it really wasn't.
She really didn't. No, she didn't. She didn't deserve better because she just stuck around for this shit. She took it all the shit. She took it all.
Honestly, she comes across as really shallow.
Yep, there's a lot. Yeah. We didn't
Right,
do
so
it.
tropes, the main tropes first.
He's a starchy duke and she's a scandalous commoner.
She's the legitimate but untitled half sister of a Marquis.
Yes, her mother abandoned her brothers and her first husband, who got a divorce, and her mother married Juliana's father in Italy, and then her mother abandoned her in Italy.
Right.
There you go. And anyway, we'll talk about that more.
All right, I need to talk about one of the things in the plot that made the least amount of sense. This thinks it's a sex bet book. They regularly talk about the bet they have going that he gives her 2 weeks, which is an arbitrary timeline based on nothing, to prove to him that he can't live without passion.
Right.
But there are no stakes to the bet.
Right. Like, what happens if someone loses? I don't know. No one knows. There are no, you're right. There's no stakes.
And like the timeline isn't based on anything. Like, yes, he's planning on proposing to someone else, but he doesn't say, I won't propose until the end of your 2 weeks.
Right.
Like, they don't make any agreement about how they're going to behave. It's just like he gives her the okay to try to seduce him for 2 weeks with no actual objective. And
Yeah.
neither of them get anything for winning other than
Well,
sex.
right. And that's the thing too. It's like in the book jacket, it says he's going to teach her a lesson in propriety. He never attempts to do that.
No. No.
Nope.
And it also would have made sense to me if there was something, I don't know, if like her mother showing back up happened earlier, and the deal was that if he caved and admitted that sometimes like good people do things that are not by the book, he would stand by her family and face the scandal.
Yeah.
Or just like some thin veneer. This is literally just like, you hate yourself for wanting me, and so challenge for the next 2 weeks. I'm just gonna make you want me all the time.
Yeah, and like what is the end goal? There is no end goal.
Right.
There's no end goal. For either of them.
Correct.
Anyway, okay. Sins of the mother this time. Her mother is like the worst possible woman in the entire world. She's awful.
Yes.
It's very annoying, in my opinion, this character. She's like, she's a very flat character who exists just to be a horrible person.
Right. And so Juliana's major internal strife is that she thinks she's just like her shitty mom. Mm-hmm. And that's why she thinks she deserves to be treated like shit.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a tough plot to pull off.
Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to pull that plot off. I'm trying to think if I feel like Eloisa James wrote a similar plot.
Honestly, the only ones I can think of, and don't ask me to name names, but I'm pretty sure I've read books where this is the setup, and then she's ended up with a different guy.
Right.
She's got, like, some shitty guy she's been betrothed to for 20 years who won't marry her.
Yes.
And she thinks she deserves that, or, like, that's what she's owed, and then she meets someone else who actually sweeps her off her feet.
Yeah. The one I can think of is Say No to the Duke by Eloisa James.
Perfect.
Yeah. Which is, it's fine. Like, I liked it better than this one.
And then there's another trope here that, again, is just deployed in a way that didn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
So the two of them spent a lot of the first half of the book reflecting on this one night where they first met, where he didn't know who she was.
Right.
And she was very deliberately evasive about her identity.
Mm-hmm.
And they kissed. And then he found out who she really was. And he's been mad about her ever since, but, like, can't shake the lust. And it serves the purpose of, like, creating the sexual chemistry from page one. But plot-wise, it doesn't, like, serve any other purpose. And I think it might have made more sense to have their first interaction be without that loaded context.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the issue is that, and this is why I wrote the summary that I wrote, which is that I don't know what they see in each other. There's a lot placed on this previous relationship that they had, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of reference to it, but it's not on the page.
Right.
And so you don't know, like, why was it such a betrayal to him that he didn't know who she was? Why did they feel like they were meant for each other? Like, what happened? I feel like the book, if it were a different book, and, like, the first third of it even was them, like, kind of sneaking around and being with each other, not really knowing
right.
who the other one was, and then they realized who the other one was, it would have been better. And also that he didn't feel superior to her, because that's really how he comes off throughout the book. And more of a, he does have a reason for having to avoid scandal. If he was, like, more cut up about it and, like, really upset that he couldn't be with her.
Right, rather than disdainful of her.
Right.
Yeah. It also has this setup that is a little bit tropey, but which, again, is not executed here in the way I'm used to seeing, where in the beginning he thinks her only worthy of being a mistress.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes around the idea that she'll be a wife.
Yeah.
And it, to be honest, she's not scandalous enough for that to make sense.
Right.
At least not how she's presented in the book. So anyway, all right, let's do this sinister style. Where do you want to start?
Got to start at the beginning. So what happens in the beginning is she has to sneak out of a ball from the garden because if she had known better, she wouldn't have done it. She went out into the gardens and was accosted by a man who she defended herself against. She punched him in yes. the face and she kicked him in the nuts.
Yep.
And then she leaves. Her dress gets all torn up. She's also been bruised by this guy. Like, he grabbed her wrist and, like, really hurt it.
And he was basically saying, I'm going to rape you to teach you a lesson.
Yep. And so she sneaks out, and then she sneaks into a carriage. And she's like, I'm going to just hang out here so the guy loses me, because he's, like, chasing her. So I'm going to hang out in this carriage, and then I'm going to, like, sneak back in somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, the carriage starts moving, and who gets in the carriage but the Duke of Leighton?
And in this moment, she reflects on, like, she hates him specifically so much because when he learned who she was, he started looking down on her.
Mm-hmm. And then we do get his perspective, and he's like, oh, she's trying to entrap me into marriage.
Right. She's another one of those women.
And he, like, treats her like shit until he sees that she's been assaulted. He doesn't take her word for it. Right. And then he's like, oh, she actually, like, has bruises on her, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And he's like, oh, I guess I should believe her. And I don't know. I'm just like, maybe you should believe women without them having to show you their bruises.
Yeah, I did think about that a lot while reading this book.
Mm-hmm.
How much of my, you know, overall dislike of it has to do with the actual text versus how much of it had to do with the subtext?
Right, right, right. Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm not quite sure where my answer falls there, even having read it twice now. Like, I definitely think I was reading more into his men know best attitude than was necessarily intended, but I don't think the book stands very well on its own, even removing all of that.
Right. And I do think this is, we talked about this when we talked about 10 Ways to Be Adored, but I think that this is leaning on that old school romance trope of forced seduction, where he thinks that she's not a virgin. He thinks that she's like someone's mistress or whatever. And then, like, as they're having sex, he's like, oh, actually, she's a virgin. So I mm-hmm. guess I should treat her well. That's what it
right,
felt like.
Right, except
to me.
He doesn't learn anything new about her here.
Nope.
He doesn't, like, he knows she is the sister of one of his dearest friends. In fact, he thinks at one point in the book, his only friend.
Uh-huh.
Like, that doubling down on the this just makes no sense.
Right?
Like, she is very, very close to the only person in the world he is not biologically related to that we understand him to care about.
Mm-hmm.
But he assumes she has the worst motives and she is trying to seduce him because of her parentage, which is half of his best friend's parentage. And the side he is suspicious of is the side that is his best friend's. It's very weird.
Yeah. And I mean, I think part of it is it really comes down to him as a character, like we said. Like, mm-hmm. I really do feel like if he didn't treat her like she was trying to entrap him into marriage, or if he thought about how she had proven herself to be a liar because mm-hmm. of their previous encounters, that would have mm-hmm. made more sense. And instead he was like, well, she's the daughter of a scandalous woman, so that's why.
It made me think of the scene in the Bridgerton TV show where Daphne is, like, walking around the ballroom and, like, starts talking to Simon to, like, get somebody creepy off of her back.
Mm-hmm.
And Simon immediately assumes she's, like, being impertinent and throwing herself at him to entrap him. And then Anthony walks up and he realizes she's Anthony's sister and he is immediately put in his place.
Yep.
Except the relation to a best friend and understanding the woman's rank does not make him rethink.
Yeah, not at all.
Yeah, he's a dickbag.
He really is. Okay, so after this, they go back to his place. Her brother comes over, and her brother is not reading the room very well. And he's like, hey, Simon Layton, Duke of Layton, can you... Oh, his name is Simon, too. Thank him with him. He goes, hey, can you please help me keep an eye on Juliana? Because she's skirting the edges of propriety, and I would appreciate it if I had a friend to help me.
And you are the only person I know who gives a fuck about propriety.
Yeah. And Simon is like, I'll totally do that. And I'm like, Ralston, wrong idea here.
Ralston is a little bit unhinged in this, but in a way that is in character. I'll give credit where it's due.
I mean, Ralston, let's be honest, he was probably the best male character in this entire book.
He's the best male character in this series, and he is not perfect.
No, he's not, but I mostly liked him.
He's flawed in a way that means well, and I believe that.
Right. Okay, so then opera time. They're at the theater.
Yeah.
And they have a theater encounter, because of course they do. And this is where they make the passion bet.
And she's already been the subject of scandal. And she's doing the thing where she's claiming she doesn't care about scandal and in some ways actively courting it, more to prove that she can't lose at their rules if she's not trying to succeed.
Yeah.
And he catches her in the hallway and sort of starts pointing this out. But of course, it just immediately becomes this, like, us up to 11.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, there with the woman he is supposed to get engaged to. And she points out, like, well, then why are you following me?
Yeah. And, you know, again, I really do feel like if we had a sense of why they were drawn to each other, this might have worked better.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, I'm like, he is treating you like shit. Like, why would you ever even talk to this guy?
He's so mad at her through the whole book. And I understand that what he's really mad at is himself. But he needed to do a little more work to figure that out. And I understand that in some ways that might have been out of character. But in this way, they both just, she seems dumb and he seems mean.
Right. Okay, so theater encounter. Then they have a Hyde Park encounter because she's riding her horse astride. So he's like out riding his horse and then she tears up to him and he's like, what? A woman riding astride? Crazy. And it's Juliana. I will say the one thing I appreciated about this scene, I'm going to give Sarah McLean some credit, is that he was like, wow, look at this rider. This rider is really great. Like, really has a good seat, blah, blah, blah. And he's not like, obviously it's a woman because look at her ass.
Right.
It's not until he gets to her face that he's like, oh my God, it's Juliana.
I think I started out not too mean because I mean every uncharitable thought I have about this book. But when I said it's a series of vignettes, like a lot of the vignettes on their own kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
It's that there is no like progression of growth or character development between them to make the book as a whole resonate. Like that scene in Hyde Park as a whole, I liked if it had been followed up by him starting to grovel and realize he was wrong in that moment.
Exactly.
A lot of the sex scenes when we get there are kind of hot.
Yeah.
But they're inserted in parts of the story that make no sense.
I actually have a lot of thoughts about that.
Yeah.
The sex scenes. Okay. So they meet. They like make out. Then next vignette, she's like, come meet me in Hyde Park tonight at 5. Mm-hmm. And he shows up late. And in the meanwhile, her bonnet went out into the lake and she fell in and was going to die.
And this is where I start getting into the she's too dumb to live.
Yeah.
Like, ultimately, at what point is that natural selection at work?
My God. All right, so he shows up, saves her. Let's see what's next. Dinner party, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then there's a dinner party at Callie's. Like, you're 100% right, because I'm like, okay, first we've got the ball. Then we have the theater, then we have Hyde Park, then we have Drowning in the Serpentine, then we have the dinner party. So they're at this dinner party and things are going okay, like not too terrible dinner party, but who should show up but
her shitty mom.
Her mom walks in and claims to be the Marchioness of Rolston, in other words implying that Juliana is illegitimate.
Right.
And just, you know, throwing a wrench into everything. Like, things were going okay. Juliana thought maybe society would start to accept her. And then they didn't, you know. It's really terrible, horrible ending to the dinner party.
And then this is the beginning of Leighton, like, alluding to Juliana that he actually has a reason. He's so obsessed with propriety right now.
Uh-huh.
Because interspersed in all of these, like, vignettes between the two of them are him meeting with the girl he wants to be engaged to's dad.
Yeah.
Going to balls, all of that stuff. And he basically is actually sympathetic to, like, her mom has showed up and thrown a wrench in the good she's been trying to do.
Right.
But he doesn't stay sympathetic for long.
Yeah. Because then they go into the stable. So Juliana gets freaked out. She runs into the stable. He comes into the stable because, of course, he does. And they have, like, a little bit of a conversation, and then they make out.
And then her brother walks in, basically threatens to call him out, and he's like, I will do the right thing. I will marry her, when he is reminded of his sister, who is, not a spoiler alert, because you learned this in an earlier book, but pregnant with an illegitimate child.
Yeah, and he's engaged to someone else.
Well, right, but so he, when Ralston brings up, would you do this? What would you do with your sister? He says, I'll marry her. And then he says, you can't do that because you're engaged, dumb fuck.
Yep, yep. And then Juliana, of course, is like, oh my God, I was making out with an engaged dude.
Even
and I was
though like, she already knew.
I was like, you're an idiot, Juliana.
Ugh. Yeah, this is where she's just, again, too dumb to live.
Okay, next vignette. She decides to go to the country to see her other brother,
who just happens to be harboring Leighton's sister.
Right. So she's like, I need to get out of town. Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot another vignette, which is that she went to the ball where the engagement was officially announced.
And he plays piano on her.
Yes.
Literally seconds before going to announce his betrothal.
Yes. Which I was like, you are a piece of shit.
Yes.
I was unhappy with both of them in that moment. I'm going
to
be
honest.
There's
also, right before that happens, she goes to the women's retiring room and meets the fiance, who is clearly having a panic attack and does not want to marry him. Yep. And it feels like that scene is exclusively in there as some sort of, like, get out of jail free card for both of them.
Yes.
And I was like, no. It doesn't matter how she actually feels about him. Like, this is bad.
This is bad. It's real bad. And like, look, am I blaming the other woman for tempting him? No. I am blaming him for the actions that he took. However, Juliana knew. She knew that he was engaged to be married, and she literally just talked to his fiance.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it also, like, bothers me that neither of them think about consequences.
Yep.
Especially him, because, like, his current entire life is thinking about the consequences of his sister's actions.
Uh-huh.
But even she's just like, I just want to teach him a lesson by fucking him. And she doesn't even, like, have any introspection about,
yep,
wow, what does this say about me?
Right. And they don't fuck. It's just a third base situation.
That is irrelevant in this context.
I'm just saying that she's not going to get pregnant from what they did. That's the
only thing I'm saying. Yes. Physiologically, there are not likely to be repercussions. But in every other way, they be dinguses.
So then he does announce the engagement. And it's almost like, was she expecting him not to announce it or something because of what they just shared? I don't know.
And to be clear, the ball is at the fiance's house.
Yes.
Like, it's not like this is some random ball where he's like, and it's going to be tonight. This is the engagement ball.
Yes. I'm sorry. Ugh. Okay. So then she leaves, and then she's like, okay, this is too much for me. I got to get out of town. She goes to her brother's place. In the meantime, Leighton gets a letter that's like, the baby's here. And he's like, uh-oh, I also have to go to her brother's place.
Mm-hmm.
Surprise, surprise. They're in the same manor house together.
And she initially believes, based on what her brother is conveying to her, that he is there to meet his own illegitimate child.
Mm-hmm.
And he had sent, like, the woman he fucked to this, respite.
Yep. And then, so she confronts him about it, but guess what? He's turning into a really wonderful uncle because the baby is just so sweet and wonderful and whatever.
Yeah, he apparently went there to tell his sister, like, he's giving away the baby, they're going to cover it up, she has to come back to society. And instead, he gets there, and he's like, never mind, you keep your baby, we'll figure this out.
Yep. Then we have what I feel like is a little interlude into Clapis Town, because there's a village. There's, like, a village harvest festival, and they attend the village harvest festival and, like, do all the harvest festival shit. Like, they go to a fortune teller, and then they, you know, they're like, I'm just Simon today, and you're just Juliana, and we're going to run around and pretend like we're village sweethearts, and they make out again.
And then they do that for a little bit, and then he just has a fucking panic attack.
Well, she says, I love you. She, like, right, tells him, I love you, and it's like, he makes her repeat it 50 million times, and then he has a panic attack.
Oh God, he sucks so much.
I also, like, when she was like, I love you, I was like, what the fuck? I was like, no,
Liana.
Look, he's literally been nice to you like one time, and then Whiplash was immediately mean to you.
Right? Every time. Oh. So they go back to the manor, and then she can't sleep, and she's like, you know what? I can't be with him, but at least I can have his body. And she goes into his bedroom, and they fuck.
Yeah. Again, props to her, because he's like, seriously, Giuliano, do you know nothing about propriety? You show up here in nothing but your night clothes. And she responds with, I'm not wearing night clothes. And I was like, this is where I'm like, that scene without context is awesome.
Right. But with context, you're like, why, Giuliano? Why?
Yes. Like, he literally was just awful to you. And you're like, you know, fuck this. I'm fucking him tonight. And now we are going to risk pregnancy because screw it. In the house where his sister has just given birth to a baby at 17.
Yep. Okay. Then he's like, okay, we're going to get married. And she's like, no, we're not. So like second proposal, second refusal.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, and this time it's because she understands and he has to protect his sister, blah, blah, blah. She offers to be his mistress.
This is also where, like, I get super pissed off.
Yeah.
Because this is where his character development and his character growth is, like, he realizes she's actually sincere about not putting him on a pedestal because she rejects him.
Yep.
I'm like, oh, my God. I actually can't.
Yep. Yep. So they go back to town, both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And he's decided, he finally has this epiphany.
Right.
That, oh, actually, I love her and we should get married. Right. So he follows her back to town and his sister has decided to ruin herself as an engagement present to him.
So basically, rather than he or Giuliana, like, admitting how they feel about each other and trying to figure out how to make it work in the context of he's currently engaged to somebody else and all of the different, like, like the difference in status, the fact that his sister's pregnant and there's about to be a scandal. Yes, he decides he loves her and he needs to do something about it, but he doesn't take any action before Georgiana has published news of her own motherhood in the paper.
Yep. He gets back to town and he gets a letter from his fiance's father saying the engagement is off. He did not have to lift a finger to prove that he loved her.
Or really, truly commit to the plan he'd come up with. And given that he yo-yos back and forth about what he's going to do in this book in terms of who he's going to marry and whether or not he's actually going to like buckle down and marry this person he's not interested in. Like, given that he's very indecisive throughout this book, him actually making that decision and sticking to it would have mattered.
Yep. Okay, then another vignette. He goes to a ball. He's been barred from going to this ball because his reputation is now toast.
Which I find hard to believe.
Oh, 100%.
He is a wealthy, male, hot duke. And the sister who he is clearly exiled has announced she's pregnant.
Mm-hmm. And like, you can't come in. He muscles his way in and proposes to Giuliana on the dance floor when she refuses him yet another time.
Yeah.
And then finally, in the climax of the book, he goes to see her at her townhouse and admits that he loves her. And finally, they agree to get married.
The end.
Then there's an epilogue.
Right.
With a lot of babies. Not Giuliana's baby, but like...
Giuliana's pregnant, though.
Yeah. She's pregnant. And then her two brothers have babies.
Yep.
So,
there you go. And obviously his sister has the baby.
Well, that was a given.
Yeah.
That's the book. That's the book.
So, I feel like that gets through all the frustrations we have.
Yeah.
But I do think, similar to what we said with the one that starts with 10, there's a lot here that shows you what Sarah McLean's strengths are and what she's going to grow into.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that conversation sort of comes out in the sexiness. So even though we're not doing it here, no one is coming. So before we get to that, content warnings.
We already talked about the whole, like, he doesn't believe what she says and only believes after he sees, like, objective evidence of what has happened.
Right.
So that her mother is this, like, total caricature of an evil woman, basically. Like, the worst thing a woman can do is abandon her child, right? And this woman has done it twice.
Right.
And who knows, maybe even more. Like, who knows? Like, honestly, we don't know. She could have other kids out there. We just don't know. And when Juliana's like, so do you, like, regret having done any of it? Her mom's like, nah, my life was pretty cool, so I'm good.
The only thing she alludes to maybe regretting is having children.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I'm sure that is true of a lot of people, but that's not a thing you tell your kid.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So I just feel like it was really playing into a lot of stereotypes about what a bad woman is.
Yes. And just to say it again, very explicitly, she experiences assault.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep. All right. I mean, there's also like a lot of gossip, like really mean gossip and stuff. It plays in, I think, again, to that stereotype. This is where we haven't, I don't think Sarah McLean has quite progressed yet to the, like, we don't have to have evil secondary woman characters, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, all of society is, like, horrible, and most of the women in society are terrible. So. One other thing. This isn't really a content warning. It's just something that I didn't like. And it's that Penelope, which is Lady Penelope, is Simon's fiance.
Mm-hmm.
And Juliana refers to her as the grape throughout the book. And I think it wasn't meant to be offensive, but I did not appreciate that even after she knew who she was and knew her name, like talked to her, saw that she was a real person, she continued to just call her the grape.
Right. I think it was very deliberately something meant to be dismissive without being like an offensive term.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think grape is a loaded insult.
Right.
But you're right. She insists on not humanizing Penelope, even though Penelope is, if anyone, the victim in all of this.
Absolutely. If there's any person who's like completely innocent in this entire thing, it is Penelope. Right. I will say when I first read this, when I read this book the first time, she called her the grape the whole time. And I thought it was an allusion to Penelope being fat for some reason. Cause like grapes are round. She's not fat. I'm just going to say that. I don't know why.
I don't really think I know why or gave any thought to why the grape.
Yeah.
Other than like somehow it being an allusion to Juliana being the Italian fine wine.
Yeah.
By comparison.
I guess, yeah.
But yeah. I don't think grape in and of itself was conveying anything.
No, I don't think it was meant. I think you're right. It was meant to be dismissive without being particularly offensive. I still
like,
didn't love it.
It's not saying she's fat or she's ugly or she's stupid or she's, yeah.
Yeah. It didn't make me like Juliana any more than I already did, which was not a lot.
Right.
Okay, let's talk about the sexiness.
This book does a lot of telling you they are really hot for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say there's enough that I did buy that. I think what I didn't buy was that it was love and not lust.
Right. So this is the Love by Numbers series, right?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the sex scenes, like where they were placed, how they were written, was almost like a paint by numbers romance novel.
Okay.
Because it was like, okay, well, we have they start with a kiss, And then it moves on to like making out with a little bit of like humping. And then it moves on to, oh, no, we're going to go to second base. And then it moves on to, okay, it's going to be third base. And it's like, right, we hit all the popular places in a historical romance to have sex as well. So we've got Hyde Park Woods. We've got the stables. We have the conservatory at a ball. We've got like the greatest hits, paint by numbers kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this is almost a template for, I don't want to say that this is a template that Sarah McLean uses in the future. That said, right, I think it is, it gives you an idea of like where she thinks a sex scene is appropriate, even if for these characters, I did not feel it was appropriate.
Yes.
I think that was the issue to me, is I was like this, the sex is like, written is very hot, like on the right page, like it's very sexy.
Each
I just
individual
like,
scene yes works if you erase all the context from your brain.
Exactly. But I couldn't erase the fact that like he was just thinking that she was, you know, this horrible person who was below him, and now he's like, oh, I can't resist him. Like I just, to be honest, I could not understand why she would ever entertain him.
It was so weird because he very much frames it all as like, this is all her fault.
Yeah.
For making me want her. I am not responsible for my own behavior. But then she's playing into that by being like, I am here to prove to you that passion matters and every decision you're making is dumb.
Yeah.
So it's a shame because like the scene on top of the piano at the ball was hot. The scene where she shows up in his bedroom wearing nothing was hot.
Yeah.
Like, all of the clandestine makeouts were hot.
Yeah, but it's like, that's the thing, especially the one at the ball, his engagement ball, just like the fact that that's where they did it and right when, like, I could not remove myself from that. Like, look, I think I'm a sex positive person, right? I love reading romance novels. We rank them on their sexiness. But I was like, you know, I don't think that you guys are making a very good choice right now.
Well, and this is what it comes down to. Like, the sex scenes, I think, are indicative of what Sarah McLean still does very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were sexy. They were, for all that you're saying, they were penned by numbers. I did feel, like, captivated by them. There were a lot of, like, beyond the sex scenes, a lot of witty repartee and, like, a lot of fun interactions. It's just that the book as a whole didn't put them together in a way that was compelling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that's what I mean by paint by numbers, right?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, let's put this thing that on its own is fine, but it's going to fit right here in this spot. And it doesn't quite match the rest of the painting, you know?
Yes.
So anyway, we didn't love it, but there will be a new Sarah McLean book out someday soon, and we'll read it, and I'm sure we will like it a lot.
Isn't the next one going to be a contemporary?
No, we're going to read the Duchess's book first.
Ah, okay. Well, then, yes, I'm very excited for that one.
Then we'll read the contemporary, which Lane is a little nervous about.
No hate to Sarah McLean. We just all know how I feel about contemporaries.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you guys so much for listening.